This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ihejus Wuhibe in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We saw some governments in our research instituted discriminatory policies, and authorities enforced measures in a discriminatory way, and also with excessive and sometimes fatal force in terms of the enforcement of those regulations, including the killing of people in South Africa.
That's Diwa Mavinga, head of Human Rights Watch in Southern Africa, on a report saying the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic set off human rights crisis worldwide. Details coming up. Also, 279 schoolgirls abducted last week in Nigeria have been reunited with their families. And UN Human Rights Chief says war crimes may have been committed by multiple actors in Ethiopia's Tigray region. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. The World Health Organization says COVID-19 vaccine distribution in African countries is accelerating, and hopeful signs are emerging that a significant proportion of Africa's population will be covered by the end of the year. Latest figures put the number of infections in Africa at more than 3.9 million, with 104,000 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Data show the COVID-19 pandemic overall is on a downward trend in most countries on the continent. However, World Health Organization officials fear a resurgence of cases in the future as pressure increases to ease lockdown restrictions. They point to a recent rise of COVID-19 cases in 10 countries as a worrying sign. At the same time, the acceleration of vaccine distribution in Africa is giving rise to hope. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says nearly 10 million vaccine doses have been delivered to 11 countries this week, and she expects about half of all countries on the continent will receive COVID-19 vaccine deliveries in the coming weeks. She says most countries will have vaccination programs underway by the end of March. Moeti says the COVAX facility is targeting 3% of the population as it starts its vaccine rollout across Africa. But she adds COVAX aims to increase that figure and cover 20% of the population by the end of the year.
We are very pleased that the African Union working through its vaccine acquisition task team has targeted ensuring that by the end of the year, sufficient vaccine has been procured and available to countries to cover 60% of the population.
By the end of the year, Moeti says she hopes to reach a level of coverage in African countries that not only reduces severe illness and deaths, but also starts to slow down the spread of the coronavirus. In other words, she says she hopes the continent will achieve so-called herd immunity. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Scientists in South Africa have made a groundbreaking discovery on the new COVID-19 501YV2 variant dominating infections across the country and its neighbors. Research shows that people infected by the variant have developed strong immunity or antibodies that guard against reinfection, including by other variants. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
According to the research done by the KwaZulu-Natal Research Innovation and Sequencing Platform, KRISP, scientists discovered that those infected by the 501YV2 variant emerge with a strong immunity system against COVID-19 variants. Professor Tulio D. Oliveira is the head of KRISP.
The plasma collected from people infected with the variant has good neutralizing activity against itself, but also against the first wave virus and potentially other variants of concern. It means that people infected may have some immunity against the variant and other lineages.
Benny Moore from the National Institute of Communicable Diseases, NCID, describes the discovery as a milestone in the fight against COVID-19.
This is potentially good news. It's not that the antibodies that are triggered by 501YB2 are somehow magical. There is a drop-off. They do preferentially recognize the virus that infected those people. But unlike the antibodies that were triggered by the original variant, these antibodies seem somehow to have a little bit more breadth. But the bottom line is that there does seem to be, in people infected with the new variant, greater capacity to neutralize the other variant.
Another scientist, Alex Segal, says the possibility is strong that the variant dominant in South Africa could be the solution for future COVID-19 variants.
This kind of gives you some idea of how this problem of variants can be solved. And maybe it can be solved with the variant that was first found in South Africa. Because it seems like if you're infected with this variant or you can design a vaccine with this variant, it might be cross-protective to other variants.
The government says this discovery could open a path for South Africa to produce its own vaccine. Blade Nzimande is the Minister of Science and Technology.
What this means, amongst other things, is that vaccines now that are based on dealing or likely to generate neutralizing agents against the current variant can actually be developed.
South Africa's current COVID-19 recovery rate stands at above 90%. Scientists have, however, warned that the results of this research do not in any way mean that those infected by this variant should not be vaccinated. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
279 girls abducted last week from a boarding school in northwestern Nigeria have been reunited with their families. However, the Associated Press reported chaos erupted at the reunion when security forces opened fire after stones were thrown at government officials, apparently in frustration at the drawn-out negotiation procedures. Anxious and angry parents, who were united with the girls after 6 days of waiting, grabbed their daughters and left after shots rang out. Officials say the abductors are bandits who operate in Nigeria's Zamfara state and kidnap for money or use kidnappings as a leverage to demand release of their members in jail. A police raid on a fishing trawler off South Africa's west coast found 973 blocks of compressed cocaine worth over 580 million rand. Six men appeared in court over their arrests, reporter Vicky Stark reports.
De Klerk says it looks as though the cocaine was coming into the country, not going out. He thinks the South African prison gang known as the 28s could be responsible. He says in the past 3 or 4 years, the gang has been moving operations from the Western Province's east coast, where they catch and smuggle abalone, also known as pelamun, to the province's west coast.
We know that there's a push to expand the operation, firstly to get away from the attention on the east coast, to move to the west coast, and that they've been acquiring properties, businesses, outlets in areas as remote as Lyplek and other little places that they feel are under police. There's less attention on them, they're unknown, and they can acquire and legitimize their criminal enterprises through acquiring cottages, clubs, shops, and also acquiring new and more diverse outlets for money laundering.
Access to new supply routes is also a draw card for the gang.
By sea is one of the biggest supply routes that there's been, given the East Africa corridor all the way from Mogadishu, Mombasa, Tanzania, through all the way to Hermanus and then into Cape Town Harbour, and now around Cape Town to Saldanha, on to Walvis Bay and then into West Africa. So there seems to be an expansion from the East Africa route to West Africa.
De Klerk thinks the 28s gang is selling some things and buying others.
So diamonds go one way, pelamun go one way, trade in exotic species go one way, and coming in is your refined synthetic drugs rather than it being manufactured here. So you pay with one and you get for the other.
He doesn't think the court case involving the 10 suspects from Bulgaria and Myanmar will significantly help law enforcement clamp down on drug trade. The men from the ship, he said, likely know very little about the overall operations. He also says the gang could be allowing some smuggling vessels to be captured as decoys.
The operation takes a lot of resources, but it also takes people away from what else might be happening coming in. So if the last three buses all being small, for example, trawler, fishing trawler type stuff or smaller boats coming off whatever, you think that's the modus operandi of the criminal enterprise. So they're willing in that process to sacrifice what may seem to us as significant drug hauls, but it tells you the size of the enterprise, maybe into the multi-billions.
De Klerk says one way to help combat narcotics is for South African law enforcement to have more covert operations. He says currently there's too much reliance on informants. At the hearing Thursday, the court ordered the proceedings postponed until the 12th of March so that interpreters can be found for the suspects. The National Prosecuting Authority says some of the Bulgarians seem to understand a bit of English, but not the others. This is Vicky Stark for Voice of America News in Cape Town.
Human Rights Watch has released a report saying the year-long COVID-19 pandemic has set off human rights crisis worldwide. The report documents how governments have allowed corruption to flourish and used the pandemic to clamp down on critics. Columbus Mavunga reports from the capital of Zimbabwe, one of the countries named in the 54-page report.
The Human Rights Watch report says the coronavirus pandemic, which has claimed more than 2.5 million lives worldwide, should not be used as an excuse to trample on people's basic rights. Dewa Mavinga, head of Human Rights Watch in Southern Africa, says civic groups and the media must ensure governments account during the coronavirus pandemic. Mavinga sums up the HRW report.
Some governments introduced restrictions on movement, including national lockdowns, which were quite disproportionate or inappropriate for the level of the public health threat that was being confronted. We saw some governments in our research instituted discriminatory policies, and authorities enforced measures in a discriminatory way and also with excessive and sometimes fatal force in terms of the enforcement of those regulations, including, you know, the killing of people in South Africa.
The report says Zimbabwe's government did not release political prisoners when President Emmerson Mnangagwa granted amnesty to decongest crowded jails to contain the spread of COVID-19.
We also saw the excessive use of force by the police and the military to enforce lockdown measures and the arrest of thousands of people into places of detention that are overcrowded already, which further raised the risk for the spread of the pandemic. We saw also that the virtually collapsed public health system was not fully equipped to address the COVID-19 pandemic challenges, especially in the context of serious reports of corruption in the COVID-19 procurement of equipment, and the journalists and anti-corruption activists who exposed the corruption also faced harassment and arrests by the authorities in Zimbabwe.
Monica Mchangwa, Zimbabwe's information minister, said she has yet to see the HRW report. Bright Matonga, a member of ruling ZANU-PF party and a former government minister, says the HRW report is very partisan toward Zimbabwe.
Obviously, with the pandemic, a lot of rights issues were cancelled. Obviously, the people didn't go to work because governments were following WHO procedures and processes. But let me say that the World Health Organization commended Zimbabwe for a job well done during the lockdown, for providing enough information, access to testing, and obviously for getting the COVID vaccine on time. So I don't think it's really, that report is a very tacky report.
However, Fadzai Mahere, spokeswoman for Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC, says the HRW report is on target.
Most fundamentally, the COVID-19 lockdown measures were used as a tool to curtail the right to protest, as we saw, for example, in July 2020, freedom of speech and freedom of the media. We've also seen an escalation of the weaponization of the law to silence dissenting voices, including journalists, opposition politicians, youth activists, and the student movement. So we can see that there's a laundry list of rights that were violated by the government over the last year using the veil or excuse of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mahere is one of the people facing charges of violating Zimbabwe's lockdown regulations last July when she took part in protests against the government's response to the pandemic. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Harare.
As Zimbabwe eases COVID-19 lockdown restrictions, getting schools ready to open remains a problem as officials figure how to make up for lost time and help students who still don't have or cannot afford internet access on days when they want to be in class. Reporter Kudza Zanwashi has the details.
The latest update is from the post-cabinet briefing. This is Minister of Information, Monica Mutsangwa.
Cabinet agreed that the school calendar for 2021 starts on a slightly phased approach, with the examination classes opening on 15th March and the rest on 22nd March 2021. Teachers for examination classes should therefore report for duty on 10th of March 2021 and the rest of the teachers on the 17th of March 2021.
She said some measures are aimed at ensuring a smooth resumption of the education calendar.
There shall be rotational school attendance in classes where learners cannot exercise social distancing. On the days when children are not at school, learners will be engaged through strategies such as open distance learning and e-learning. Relevant modules are already under production. Among the catch-up strategies, all continuing classes will start with 2020 work. Syllabi have been compressed to facilitate accelerated coverage. Both primary and secondary school levels will follow three levels of accelerated compressed syllabus coverage.
Obed Masaraure is the president of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union. He says government is on its pathway to fail.
Very unfortunate that the government of Zimbabwe is adopting a random shooting approach where they simply declare dates of schools opening without engaging stakeholders to have a clear plan on how are we going to open the schools, how are we going to address the hiccups which we faced in the past, how are we going to ensure that our schools are going to effectively and safely open so that we bridge the gap of our time lost.
What's more, learners in rural areas have challenges with e-learning. These include access to smart devices, high cost of internet, and poor network infrastructure in most areas. Masaraure recommends that the government reach an agreement with teachers on salaries, helping schools that can't ensure World Health Organization guidelines, and clarity on how learners will transition from one grade to the next. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
Rwandan innovation firm Ared is using the state-of-the-art innovative business model to provide Wi-Fi, low-cost phone charging, airline sales, mobile money transfers, and other services. Ared has created jobs that empowers women and people with disabilities in rural and urban communities. For more insight, Africa 54 technology correspondent Paul Ndiho, via Skype, spoke to Henry Nayakarundi, CEO and founder of Ared Group in Kigali, Rwanda.
Yeah, so when we first met, we were focusing on just energy. So we had developed this solar kiosk platform to provide phone charging services. Today, we've evolved the technology much further. Now we also do phone charging, but we're mostly focusing on connectivity. So in the meantime, we develop what we call an edge solution on a mini server. So the idea now of the kiosk is to becoming a one-stop shop access to not just phone charging, but also access to digital applications using Wi-Fi. So user, especially low-income people, can access information on their phone without having internet on their phone. And that's really what our new value proposition is. And then the good thing is now we've been able to expand. We're in four countries right now. We're adding two countries this year. But on the technology side, that has been the biggest change.
Why would one want to come to your kiosk as opposed to going to MTN or Airtel?
You get the same service as MTN or Airtel, plus more. Airtel, MTN don't have Wi-Fi connectivity or edge technology. They don't have phone charging services on your on their kiosk. So, you know, the value is right there. Now you can get all your services from one location. And we even added now government services where you can pay your taxes, so on and so forth. So it's a true one-stop shop. So if you're a customer, you come to our kiosk, you want to charge your phone, that's great. But let's say you need to buy airtime or you need to transfer money, you can do that also. Let's say you want to download content or see, you know, or check the news or so on and so forth, you can do that also. So we really wanted to build a one-stop shop for digital access.
How do people access those services? Do they have to come to that kiosk for them to be able to access the news, for example, or anything, any content online? Or there is a way they can tap into your Wi-Fi connection to be able to do that remotely without being able to come to your kiosk?
No, so it's a connectivity on the go, we call it. So it's really for people that are in public places, you know, when you're waiting for your bus, if you're in a marketplace while shopping, anywhere there's a high traffic of people, whether it's in rural area, semi-urban area, or refugee camps, that's where we focus on. We don't focus on home connectivity. We really focus on connectivity on the go, while you're on the go. And of course, the Wi-Fi radius is about 100 meter. So you don't need to be very close, but you have to be on our radius.
Is it a free service?
Some of them is free, some of them it's not. It depends what service you're talking about. The Wi-Fi access is free, but we generate money through on the business level. So businesses use our platform to distribute what they want to distribute on our Wi-Fi platform.
Your goal is to revolutionize how technology is distributed, especially when it comes to these phones that we use or simple things that we do every day. Can you speak more about that?
You know, what we're trying to do is connect the unconnected. You know, in Africa, statistically, 70% of the population are still not connected to the internet or still not using the internet. That's a huge number. If you look at business today, e-commerce, digital money, because mobile money use USSD, but digital money needs internet. All these internet business are focusing on the 30%. And that's the challenge. Everybody's focusing on the 30% of the population that is connected, the middle class, you know, or lower middle class. But there's 70% of the population not connected, and that's where we're focusing on. Our goal is to connect the unconnected. It's a huge market, but it's a very challenging market because it's not just about connectivity. It's about educating the people about the connectivity you're providing. It's also, you know, it's a very long-term investment structure. And that's what we do at ERED.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suwohib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Amokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.